Hello and welcome to Stepping Into Truth, the podcast where we take on the issues of race, gender, and social justice. I'm your host, Omkari Williams, and I'm very happy that you're here with me today. Hosting this podcast is such a pleasure for me. I'm privileged to speak with people who are out in the world making a difference with their day jobs, their programs, their art, their activism. If you would like to support me in doing this work, you can do so for as little as $3 a month by becoming a member of my Patreon community. You can go to patreon.com/OmkariWilliams and sign up. There's also a link on my website, omkariwilliams.com. Before I introduce today's guests, I want to turn you all on to a podcast I found that I think you'll like. Check out Three Righteous Mamas, where three all-American moms who are Latina, Muslim, and queer talk about the issues of the day with some of the biggest change makers and thought leaders in our world. These three mamas are on a mission to transform our country while celebrating the power and hope of pissed off mamas who are building a better future for all of our children. Check it out on whatever platform you get your podcasts. Now to today. I'm really excited for this conversation. Did you know that the city of Boston played a prominent role in the lives of Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King? I didn't. But the impact of that city on them and their impact on that city and what that means for us now is the subject of today's conversation. In a first for Stepping Into Truth, today I have two guests on the show. My guests work with King Boston, which is a privately funded nonprofit working closely with the City of Boston and the Boston Foundation to create a living memorial and programs honoring the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Coretta Scott King. Let me introduce you to Tammy Tai, who joins King Boston as deputy director with more than 25 years of experience in the nonprofit sector. Her work is primarily focused in areas of youth development, mentoring, and leadership development, including her work at Tai Consulting, a multi-service global consulting practice grounded in principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and strategic planning. Tai serves on the faculty of the Institute for Nonprofit Practice and is an adjunct lecturer on education at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Her colleague, Greg Ball, brings more than two decades of experience as a cultural curator, journalist, and content creator to his role as director of Embrace Ideas. He will be essential in helping guide the organization through ongoing Embrace Ideas programming and the annual Embrace Summit. Ball will focus on community engagement and partnership development grounded in activities and campaigns addressing well-being initiatives, arts, and spatial justice. I am so happy to welcome Tammy and Greg to the podcast. Hi, how are you both?
Hey, thank you.
Good. So I'm going to just dive in because that's kind of what I do. And where I want to start is I would venture to say that when most people think of Dr. King, they locate him in the Deep South, Birmingham, Selma, Atlanta, maybe DC for his I Have a Dream speech. But I don't think that most people know about how pivotal a place Boston was in his life. And I would like to begin this conversation by sort of locating Dr. King in Boston. What brought him to the city? What were some of the pivotal experiences that he had while he was there that King Boston wants to bring to a wider consciousness?
Yeah, I could start, and Greg, you can please add. So many folks don't know, I mean, Dr. King came to do his PhD here at Boston University. And if nothing else, this was where he fell in love, right? So the love story with Coretta began in Boston. She was a fellow student at the conservatory as a music student. And this is where their love affair began, which, as we know, was the bedrock of his work, and then you could say the bedrock of the civil rights movement, and that integration of that relationship, if you will, of mutuality and commitment around economic justice, racial justice, was born right here in Boston. And as you said, it's a history that people don't know, don't associate with our city, that is extremely important. Like, this is where it all bloomed from. There's wonderful pictures of them as students going to the public garden. So this is where that love affair began, that was the basis for so much of his great work. And then, of course, he came back, right? He, in 1965, to lead a freedom rally and galvanize and really connected this city to the larger civil rights movement, and marched for issues around wealth, around racial equity, around housing, around public education, which are still the themes that we are rallying around at King Boston today.
Yeah.
I think the ability for people to know, because there are so many people who don't know that connection between Dr. and Mrs. King started here in Boston, the ability for them to find that out and to kind of uplift that. And that's what's so beautiful about the actual monument itself, that it's taken from this very pivotal moment in their relationship. Here you are, it's based on the photograph that was taken after Dr. King found out that he had won the Nobel Peace Prize. So I think that the fact that, you know, you have all those things that are intertwined and it is connected, and it's a Boston story, and it's outside of the range of what people normally connect with us, I think is great.
Yeah, and I mean, something that I think people don't think about a lot is that the person who really brought Dr. King to an understanding of the nonviolent movement was Dr. Howard Thurman. And Dr. King met Dr. Thurman in Boston. He was a student of his, and it was Dr. Thurman who shared with the young MLK his experience of having met Gandhi in India years before, and that whole concept of nonviolent protest. And obviously that was the seminal part of Dr. King's work.
Absolutely. And I think you also highlight the importance of racial amity too within the movement, right? And the ability to connect a real fusion movement at that moment, to use Reverend Barber's language today, of really reaching across racial lines and to be informed by various practices and disciplines into that movement space. Absolutely. Another reason to uplift the connection to Boston.
And something that I think is really important for people to remember is how young Dr. King was when he started making national news. I mean, he was only 39 when he was assassinated. He was only 26 years old when he led the Montgomery bus boycott. And that was after his time in Boston. And I don't know about y'all, but I know at 26, I wasn't doing anything that was noteworthy in any way, shape, or form. And I think that understanding that and understanding how influential Boston was in the work that he later went on to do is really important. And I'd like to ask you both to tell us about the overall mission of King Boston in amplifying that part of his story.
King Boston, I would say, is we're really trying to bring forth the legacy of Dr. King and being informed by his whole life and by the greater movement. I will say it's both honoring Dr. King and Coretta Scott King, right? So we're uplifting both narratives here, which also places the role of women in that movement and in ongoing movements now, right? I mean, when we think about who's on the front lines of really bringing us back to a place of wholeness, it's Black women in the United States right now. And they were, even if that story is not fully told as part of the civil rights movement, that was a crucial part of it. So uplifting both of these legacies. And so we're informed by their commitment to economic and racial justice with this vision of a Boston that's truly equitable and truly inclusive. This notion of the beloved community, this radical inclusion where we are all taken care of, right? And particularly for Brown and Black communities, that they have what they need to not just survive, but really thrive, grounded in joy and well-being. You know, the themes that we pick up on certainly are some of the same themes that Dr. King was talking about, and really making a stand for this radical look at what's possible, right? I think sometimes Dr. King's message has been watered down in history, but in that moment, and the reason why he was so feared, why the FBI was tracking him, is his thinking was radical. Right? It was a radical conception of how we should be living together the notion of what our government should be providing for its people was a radical notion. It wasn't just let's hold hands, kumbaya, and that's how it's all going to be. It was a demand, a stance for the type of legislation and policies that would call for this radical inclusion that we're picking up in. And what does that look like in modern day in 2021, and particularly coming out of this pandemic?
You know, when I look at our mission and our overall thought process of engaging on multiple levels. So yes, we have the art piece, the monument that's going up, the first major piece that's been built on the commons in 30 years. In the future, we'll have the Center for Economic Justice, which will actually be a place where people can learn and get more information about the work. And then the last leg of that is the Embrace Ideas Programming and Embrace Ideas Festival, where we'll be putting into action the very things that we're talking about and hoping to connect with the community. I think that when you look at what we're doing at King Boston, it's really putting into action a lot of the thought processes and the philosophies that Dr. King had. So I think that's where we're coming from in our approach.
You know, something Tammy said that I found really interesting, because I think it is a common misconception. I think when people think about Dr. King and Coretta, they really don't understand how radical they were, and that they were not, as you say, Tammy, just about the kumbaya. They were about really making change. And Greg, you're directing the Embrace Ideas Project. Would you tell us more about that specifically?
Of course. So the idea with Embrace Ideas is actually to be the piece that connects with the community through our programming. So whether it's our book club, whether it's the panel discussions, whether it's speakers that we bring to the space, whether it's concerts, it's all those things that are rooted in the arts and humanities, because we talk about Dr. King and why he was here, but Mrs. King was here because she was an artist. She was a singer, you know, and the importance of the arts and progressive work is just cannot be spoken of enough. It was songs that were keeping us walking and marching. It was art that's at the root of that. You know, there was art that helped fund some of the movement itself in terms of the PA system and things like that. So that's the root of the work. And with the Embrace Ideas programming, one of the things we're actually launching very shortly is our Artists in Residence program. We're piloting a program where we have artists from the community who are working on various projects that we'll have engaged at our events on a regular basis, so that we're able to support the artistic community and help give voice to them. And then beyond that, we are working with other organizations as well to support them. So because the arts and humanities is really a part of our well-being. It's part of what we use to recharge, but it's also part of what we use to inspire ourselves. And that is why I'm super excited about my work, is I get the opportunity to use something that I'm super passionate about to not just be a song that entertains people or just to be a place of entertainment, but also a place of information.
You know, when you say that, I started thinking about the songs that were associated with the protest marches in Dr. King and Coretta King's time, and thinking about them in a different way now, and just about how much inspiration we really do draw from that music, and how much that music really connected us to the moment and to each other. And part of the challenge in this particular moment of COVID is not being able to connect to each other in that way. We can't get together in the same way safely and just sing our way through into making a statement. I mean, the closest we came was the Black Lives Matter protests that happened in the wake of George Floyd this past summer, and how powerful they were, but also always there. There's always music. There's always art. There are always posters that are amazing and expressive. And I just think that that's such an important piece, because it allows individuals to express themselves in the way that makes sense for them. And that means that there's more inclusivity for everybody.
Absolutely. And the idea of bringing your whole self, the thing that I've frequently said in the wake of COVID is that we've realized how much we need each other. And we're now open to reimagining what the world can look like. You know, we were joking about the post-COVID world, about always being comfortable and relaxed and, you know, never putting on a tie again and those kind of things. But now we look at, I think we've looked at those things and we looked at many of the things that we thought were so important. And, you know, we're analyzing whether they're important or not. And then we're also realizing the things that are important. I want to start my day off with a song. I want to start my day off or at one point or another, take time to read and be able to create, or whether I'm creating something myself, whether I'm going to see something else, because, you know, through the arts, we actually see ourselves. I may not be able to explain to you what I went through to get to this point in my life, but I may be able to write a song about that. And you may have a better chance understanding me through that than you would if I sat here and talked to you for an hour. So understanding the power of the arts and the power of, of all those things is just so important. And quite honestly, we tried it the other way. We tried it the compartmentalized and we just only do these. No, we tried it that way. How about we just go, we're going to come to the table and we're going to bring everything that we have in order to create the world that we need to be in.
I love that, because one of the things that I've been really thinking about in this past year is I don't want to go back to normal. Normal did not work for most people. Normal worked for a tiny, tiny fraction of people. I want something very different. And to create that, we need community, because I can't create that just by myself. If I'm doing it by myself, then that's Omkari's idea of what's perfect and normal. That is not going to make everybody else feel included. We need to be able to come together, look at what did not work, what we need to shift, and have a conversation about it. And actually, Tammy, I want to ask you, because your area of expertise is youth development. And I completely feel like if this world's going to be saved, it's on the young people. And I keep telling my friends' kids, and I'm sure they all hate me because I'm like, no, you need to grow up and save the world. And they're like, oh, thanks for that. You know, no pressure. But what's your vision that you have for King Boston in the area of youth development?
Yeah, Omkari, thank you for that question. And I think just a note, as we were talking earlier, you're really describing a collective liberation, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing, when you noted Dr. King's age, young people have always been at the forefront of culture change. Young people are actively creating the world that I want to live in, like right now, right? So they don't need to grow up. They actually are doing that right now. And you know what young people lack because of that old normal, we define power structures as who's able to have access to resources, who's able to say things or deliver things. And so, you know, at King Boston, we have a commitment to, you know, and Greg's a great partner on this. We need to, our message to get into the lives of everyday people, right? And everyday people includes our young people and those young adults. And they are the ones at the forefront of changing culture, right? So if we're going to do things differently, we have to follow their lead. Right? We've got to follow how they're organizing, how they're meeting with one another, how they're connecting with one another, and give space for their ideas around this collective liberation, because there's so much there that's untapped right now. So how do we, so at King Boston, right, with my background, absolutely, I have this huge commitment that this be a very intergenerational space and particularly youth-led space. And so we've got our partners and plans for how we're supporting youth leadership development in the city and having King Boston be an epicenter for that. But it's a crucial, look at any social movement and young people have been the ones who've been the markers of it and the leaders of it.
Absolutely. So something significant happened at King Boston in the past year that I want to talk about, and that is change in the leadership. And it went from being an organization that was being led by a white man to being led by a Black man, Amari Paris Jeffries. And Paris Jeffries has dramatically shifted things from what I can see here on the outside. And he said something that I really, really like. He said, "I think we've been pretty unapologetic about asking folks to give us money to interrogate racism and less focused on raising money for a memorial." And I thought, that's perfect. You know, I can see what I think the impact of that has been from the outside, but I'm wondering what's the impact been for you on the inside of that shift in leadership?
Now, that's an interesting question because, right, Greg and I just joined 3 months ago. So
Oh, okay.
That shift didn't really impact us except to say You know, that quote from Imari, it's about sort of locating that even the monument, right, which folks might see as quote unquote just a monument, just a sculpture, just something pretty, that in and of itself is an act of liberation and is an act of resistance, right? So the placement of it, how it got created, being informed by a community-driven process, being placed in the Boston Common, which nothing has been placed there for 30 years, like that, those are acts of spatial justice. And so using that as a plank and as a shift. And I think it's important to have who's leading this organization at least be representative of the groups of people in the city whose lives we're trying to impact, right? And so that means something. But now I think it's up to us to make good on, okay, so we are Black and Brown folks running this organization. How are we really fulfilling this promise and this vision, right? How are we dismantling and imagining and building something new?
Yeah, I was going to say that I think that is, you know, that statement by Imari and his leadership is, it's really symbolic of the change in the organization. It is definitely a mirror of what we're doing as a team. So, you know, when he came on, initially the conversation was really around building the memorial. You know, our former director, Marie St. Clair, she was leading that charge and getting it through. And then after getting feedback from the community, a lot of the pieces that we are talking about that we're spearheading were things that the community gave feedback. They were like, listen, the memorial is beautiful. We love it. But what else? And Imari was equipped to answer that question, you know, and came on to do that. So, you know, when he came on and started thinking about that, you know, why can't Boston be the place that helps to heal some of the divides that we're dealing with? And he came on. It's a year ago now, Tammy. So he came on right pretty much after lockdown in a COVID world. He came on and got charged with shepherding the memorial through its process, transforming the organization to add these other dynamic pieces to it. So I think that I'm super excited about coming on board. Tammy and I both started the same day, December 4th, and we came on in December. And we were just charged about it because we knew that it wasn't just the very easy way. There's an easy way to do this job. We could put up a memorial, everybody would pat us on the back, and everybody would be very happy. Or a lot of people would be very happy. But with Imari's vision about the organization being able to do more and being able to pull people together from different spaces, I think that we're going in a great direction.
You know, what you said, I actually wanted to ask you about, because the memorial is stunning. I mean, it's absolutely stunning. Yet on its own, a memorial is not really living into the work that Dr. King and Coretta Scott King did. And that shift that's been happening away from the performative to the impactful is clear in some of the plans that King Boston has. And I'd love to hear about some of those that you can share with us.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely, right? If we stopped there, we're not honoring what the Kings stood for. So a few things. So in addition to Embrace Ideas, which I think Greg can talk more about that, we're also imagining the King Center for Economic Justice. So when we asked the community in the monument building phase, where else would you like us to focus? What else could we look at? This looking at how do you improve the economic well-being of Brown, Black communities in the city? And that is that's our charge and that's our mission. And I'll say there are lots of different ways to go at that, right? And so we're in the process of interrogating, well, what are potentially new solutions? And that requires a community organizing frame. So really getting out and talking to folks, what's going to make a difference in your life, looking at the research that's going to support that data and information that we're gathering, and then what are the corresponding policy changes and initiatives that we've got to foster. One of our efforts right now is the New Boston Coalition, which we just kicked off last month, which we envision as the big tent, if you will, to bring the city together. And if folks know anything about Boston or, you know, sort of reputation, not only do we hold a reputation as one of the racist cities or the racist city in America, we're extremely provincial, right? Everything happens in these silos, and seats of power are relegated to a few large institutions of money. Sectors don't talk to one another. So we envision through the New Boston Coalition, bringing together all of the different sectors across the city and pointing them towards equity targets. So if you say Black Lives Matter, show it. What are you doing inside of your corporations, inside of your businesses around representation? Where are you spending your money? Tell us what you're doing. And then also principles of well-being, right? How are you bringing the principles of meeting people where they are, providing a fair shot for everyone to have access to well-being? How is that living inside of your organization and what you're creating? And then as a collective, this New Boston Coalition, we hope, defines a new way of how we do business in the city, right? Where ideas for and solutions can come from anywhere in the city and not just based on you've got power because you have money and therefore your ideas are better than and we exclude others. We're really trying to create a collective here. So that's one of many initiatives that we've got in the works right now.
What kind of buy-in are you getting from the community?
I mean, you know, we launched this last month. We had almost 200 organizations and individuals joining us at that first meeting. We have work to do to get to that individual level, but we had large, small, and then in between the types of organizations in terms of budget size. One of our premises is bring folks together and the conversations, the unlikely conversations that can happen there will lead to some new thinking and new solutions. And as I think each of us talk with different folks who are part of that first meeting with us, that's what we got back was, yeah, I didn't know so-and-so, or yeah, I had some great conversations there. And you take that back into your spaces. So we think it's been positive, Omkari, but we definitely have work to do to sort of get this more out into, like I said, the lives of everyday folks who may not be affiliated with some of our partner organizations who we also want to engage in this coalition.
Yeah, that's always the challenge, is making sure that it's a broad-based experience, that it's not just isolated at 200 organizations. It's a great start, but it needs to really be in the community, because otherwise you're never going to get the input that you need to actually make the difference in people's lives that you're seeking to make. So it sounds really exciting. One of these days when this is all over, I'm going to have to come to Boston and experience this in person. So Greg, I'm going to throw this question to you. What do you think the general public misses when they think about Martin and Coretta King? What should we know that would deepen the context in which we place them?
I think the main thing that people miss when they think about the Kings is that they miss that these were two young people who were deeply committed to seeing change in the world, and that it was not this, you know, I think that we've seen that message get, you know, changed and transformed and used by all different types of people where a little bit of the teeth have been taken out of it. They were not, you know, wallflowers. They were not wallflowers in any sense of the word. And they were really pushing to do something beyond what was considered normal at that time. You know, it's so fascinating to me to see politicians who I'm pretty sure would have been calling for him to be put in jail if they were contemporaries, now try to use it as this pacifying message to look at the words of Dr. King, though he had many, many more speeches other than I Have a Dream. I think that is the piece that people are missing. I think that many times that fire that is in a young person, they'll look at Dr. King and not necessarily see that there's this kinship, there's this connection to who they are, but it takes a little bit more study to see that. And, you know, and I wouldn't even just put it on young people. I would say all of us, many of us, because we have seen over and over and over, we've gotten this presentation. In reality, he was having conversations about housing and how to fix that, education, about wealth, you know, and the distribution of money within the communities. These are conversations that he was having that weren't these quiet, let's all just be friends and walk with our arms locked together. Like, these were things that were serious, serious matters that he was bringing to the forefront. And I think that that's the piece that most folks are missing. And I would love you know, through what we do to be able to lift that up, to get more people to see the full picture of who they were. Because even with Mrs. King, she was very forward in terms of, you know, her thought process around diversity, even beyond, you know, racial diversity in terms of identity and everybody coming to the table and being a part of our solutions for our community. So I think that those are pieces that people just, it doesn't fit their narrative of the peaceful Negro, that peaceful Negro narrative. And I think that is the piece that I would love to see uplifted through what we're doing. And it's something that as we're creating programming in my wheelhouse, that we're trying to be able to make spaces so that you can see the full picture of, you know, Mrs. and Dr. King.
I think that's really important because he was a disruptor, and he was absolutely a disruptor. And part of the reason that the FBI was spending the time they were spending was because he was a disruptor, and they could see the potential for that, taking the system and turning it on its head. They weren't just paying attention to him because he was giving an I Have a Dream speech. That was not it. And I think that what you're saying there, Greg, is absolutely correct. We need to be paying attention to that because there are also lessons in there for us in this moment. If we really dive into what he believed and how he evolved, also really how he evolved over the course of his life, because he didn't start where he was when he was murdered. That's not where he started. He came to that place through seeing people's lives differently and hearing different conversations and having different experiences. And I think that's really important.
Well, he was a disruptor, but the other part, and you talk about why, you know, he's getting followed by the FBI, he was an effective disruptor.
Yes.
He was a disruptor that can light that fire in other people and increase the amount of people that were coming to the table to disrupt things. So that, I think that was the fear. There are disruptors that you can be on the corner and scream and yell and disturb everybody. But when people start listening and then people start showing up and they start just showing up in droves, and now there's more people, and you can't just wipe this guy away. You can't just shoo him off because he fits all your respectability checkboxes. He's college educated. He's going to all the right schools. I think there's people that would be within a power structure that would be very, very nervous when someone like that is lifting their voice and other people are joining them. It wasn't just that he was lifting his voice. It was just the power of people that were coming along with him.
And that's always the way it's going to be. If we're going to make change, it has got to be all of us or as many of us as we can bring along, because one person isn't going to do it. One person, as you said, Greg, can just be shooed off of the corner and no one will ever know. So, well, our time is getting short and I want to ask you to give us some actions that people can take in support of the work that King Boston is doing, because I really like for people to have a specific thing they can go out and do.
Well, I'll jump in real quick. You know, sometimes we think about these things and it gets a very daunting when we are asked a question like that. But I think the very simple thing is spread the word. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Just like you would spread the good news about something else, please spread the good news about the work that we're doing and join us. Please connect with us, kingboston.org. You can get an understanding of the initiatives that we're working on. We're trying to use that as a hub and a space for you to be able to interact and connect with us on a regular basis. And, you know, just be connected to what we're doing and we can grow with this together. Because this fight and this work is not ours solely alone. It is ours collectively. So please, if how people can support is that would be the number one thing, is just to do some research on us and then join in, connect with us, and let's figure out ways that we can work together.
That's great. I love that. Tammy.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, we're inviting people into a collective conversation. And I mean, I think folks have resources. We're looking for folks to like pitch in their capital too, right? So this work of what we're doing and shifting requires support and funding, right? So I think that's a very actionable step. And then as Greg is saying, you know, join our events, If you're Boston-based, come join and be a part of the New Boston Coalition. And then I think there's a mindset that we're actually inviting people into as well that is about interrogating and uplifting what we think is and what we think has to be and challenging for something new, right? And this pandemic has really allowed all of us to build that muscle. So continue building that muscle and moving towards greater inclusion and equity.
I love those because they're all really doable and they will get us moving. And I think that the hardest part is to get that ball rolling so that momentum is sustained and people just keep working on building the world we want to see and not let ourselves get discouraged by the things that go wrong every single day. So thank you both so much for being here. I am really delighted that I got to speak with both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And hopefully you will be there when we do our Embrace Ideas Festival.
Oh, I'll be there.
September 15th, 2022, apparently is when we're installing a monument. So
I will be there. Do not worry about that. Okay, thank you. Like that. It's easy when we think about people like Martin and Coretta King to miss the backstory, all the learning and work that went on out of the public sight. For us to continue their work, we need to recognize the importance of work that happens out of sight, as well as the work that happens in the spotlight. We need to do our part to expand on what they left us. However we can support the work of racial justice matters. Your contribution to this cause matters. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you also for listening. I'll be back with another episode of Stepping into Truth very soon. Until then, remember that change starts with story, so keep sharing yours.